Welcome to the deep dive. If you're like most of us, you've probably spent, well, hours browsing online listings, dreaming of that perfect investment property. Today, though, we're moving past the casual scrolling. Our mission is really to give you a strategic roadmap, the kind of essential knowledge you need to build genuine global wealth through real estate.
Exactly. I mean, real estate, it's still a cornerstone for long-term wealth creation, no doubt about that. But success isn't accidental, is it? You need structure. You definitely need research. And you need to understand those global market dynamics, whether you're looking at, say, regulated markets in Europe or maybe high-growth cities in Asia or even evolving markets like Saudi Arabia. The goal here is to help you spot those really high-potential opportunities, you know, before everyone else jumps in.
Okay, perfect. Let's unpack this then. We've looked at the source material and kind of distilled it into three core strategic pillars. First, what types of properties are actually out there? What are we targeting? Second, how do we find them? We need a kind of sophisticated mixed approach for sourcing deals. And third, maybe most critically, how do we evaluate them? Using the right financial metrics to see if a property is genuinely worth your capital. So let's start with the strategic what. Before we even think about agents or scrolling through listings, what are the main categories, the primary types of investment properties, and what are the strategic trade-offs, the pros and cons that kind of dictate which one you might choose?
Right. Well, there are three major types, and they really cater to very different appetites for risk and return. Most investors, especially starting out, they look at residential properties, you know, houses, apartments, maybe townhouses. Their main appeal? Well, it's liquidity and pretty constant demand. That usually means relatively stable rental income. And, of course, the potential for solid long-term capital appreciation.
Okay, that sounds like the steady baseline option. Makes sense. But in terms of actual return, where do residential properties usually sit? Especially thinking about mature global markets, what kind of yield are we talking?
Typically, yeah. The average rental yield potential, it's usually in the 3% to 6% range, globally speaking. But that stability, it comes at a price, usually lower overall yields compared to, say, commercial assets. And then there's the ongoing operational side. You know, tenant turnover, maintenance requests, headaches. So, yeah, low risk, steady returns. That's the profile.
Which brings us nicely to the next category, commercial, the high capital, potentially high reward option. That yield range, it jumps quite dramatically, doesn't it? What kind of assets fall under commercial? And what pushes that yield ceiling up towards, well, sometimes even 12%?
Yeah, commercial properties. It includes the traditional office spaces, obviously. But increasingly, it's also things like warehouses, specialized industrial facilities, logistics hubs. Think about those high-demand international trade corridors. The higher yields, sometimes hitting that 8% to 12% mark, or even plus. They're often driven by incredibly long lease terms, years, sometimes decades. That gives you stability. And the really high end of that range, you often find that in specialized assets like modern data centers or big regional fulfillment centers.
But the sources we looked at also caution that this stability, well, it can be a bit illusory sometimes, can't it? Especially when big structural shifts happen, like the huge shift to remote work. That must have destabilized traditional office returns, even with long leases locked in.
Oh, absolutely. That's a perfect example. The downside is definitely the high capital cost up front. And potentially long, painful vacancy periods. Think about it. If a major tenant leaves a massive warehouse filling that space, it takes much, much longer than finding a new tenant for an apartment. You really need to understand the underlying economic trend supporting that specific commercial subsector. Is it growing or shrinking?
Okay, that makes sense. And finally, we have the sort of disruptor category, vacation rentals. Made so accessible now by platforms like Airbnb, Booking.com, they often boast high yields on paper, but what's the catch? What's the hidden risk there?
Yeah, vacation rentals, they can offer really strong seasonal returns and flexibility too. Yields often bounce between, say, 4% and 10%. However, that income stream is driven by the tourism trade, which can be, well, fickle, unpredictable. And maybe more critically, the big risk is regulatory. So many popular high-yield tourist spots worldwide, they're constantly bringing in new restrictive local laws. Things like taxes, licenses, caps on rental days. These can just decimate your profit projections almost overnight.
Right. So if your main goal is immediate cash flow, maybe with some geographical flexibility, vacation rentals could work. But only if you've got a high tolerance for both regulatory risk and market swings. Okay. Now, if that 5% to 12% commercial yield sounds more appealing, the big question is, how do we actually find these properties, especially the ones offering those potentially higher returns? Because they probably don't just pop up in a standard online search, do they?
Exactly. And that's where the strategy needs to shift. What we learned from the research is that the most successful investors, they use a mixed approach. It's about combining the efficiency you get from digital platforms with the exclusivity of real-world human networks.
Okay, let's break that down. Starting with the digital layer. We all know Zillow, but if you're looking globally overseas, what platforms give you an edge?
Yeah, you need more specialized depth for that. For the UK and parts of Europe, for example, Rightmove is pretty essential. For the Middle East, maybe parts of Asia, platforms like Bayute or similar regional portals are dominant. What makes these so crucial now is that many aren't just simple listing sites anymore. They often integrate really essential data points, things like local rental yield estimates, neighborhood price trends. That allows you to run quick preliminary analyses right there, and you can often set up sophisticated alerts based on specific criteria.
But even with great data and AI, the human element, you know, agents, brokers, that still seems non-negotiable, especially if you're hunting for those elusive off-market deals. What makes them so vital still?
They really are the gatekeepers, particularly for those sought-after off-market opportunities. And we're not just talking about properties that haven't had photos taken yet. These are deals coming from maybe distressed sellers or private equity funds liquidating parts of a portfolio, or even pre-development land sales. Stuff that never, ever hits the public platforms. A good, well-connected local agent gives you that critical edge. Access in competitive markets, help negotiating according to local customs, and navigating, crucially, foreign legal systems.
Okay, let's touch on two alternative channels then. They seem to offer serious upside, but they definitely require preparation. Auctions, for instance. They're known as a source for deals, but what specific due diligence steps are unique, maybe even more critical, in the auction process?
Auctions, yeah. They demand two things mainly, capital ready to go and speed. Since you often can't get inside for a full inspection or you don't have weeks to do it, your due diligence has to be front-loaded. And it really needs to concentrate on title risk. You absolutely must run a thorough title search before you even think about bidding. You're looking for outstanding lien-ins, municipal debt, ownership disputes, because properties are almost always sold as is. No guarantees. Making a mistake here. It can be financially catastrophic, seriously.
Right, a costly mistake. And the final sourcing method, maybe the most exclusive, networking. What specific kinds of deals get unlocked purely through connecting with other investors? Deals you just wouldn't find otherwise.
Ah, networking. This gives you access to things like portfolio swaps between investors, maybe partnership opportunities on larger deals, or situations where a seller just wants a very private, discreet transaction. No publicity. Joining investor clubs, local trade associations, even specialized online forums. It means you hear about properties being sold simply by word of mouth, sometimes before any agent is even involved. This is absolutely crucial if you want access to high-value, niche commercial properties or development opportunities.
Okay, so let's say we've used our mixed approach online, agent, maybe networking, and we found a potential property. Great. Now comes the real work, the evaluation, the number crunching. What are the foundational metrics that successful global investors always rely on to, you know, score a property's viability? Is it a go or a no-go?
Well, we always, always start with location analysis. But it has to be predictive, not just descriptive. It's not enough to just see low crime stats and good amenities now. We need to actively identify future growth indicators.
Mm-hmm.
Things like planned transport links, a new metro line maybe, mm-hmm. or new corporate headquarters being built nearby, major governmental zoning changes, things that are likely to dramatically boost future demand and therefore value.
So if the location analysis is the sort of qualitative assessment, the story of the area, then the metrics are the cold, hard data that back it up, right? Let's start with the most basic equation everyone needs to run, rental yield.
Yeah, rental yield. It's essential. It measures your immediate cash flow, basically, the income relative to the purchase price.
Yeah.
The formula is simple. That's your annual rent divided by the purchase price, then multiplied by 100 to get a percentage. And as we mentioned, yeah, that 3% to 6% range is pretty standard for mature, stable markets.
Okay, 3 to 6%. But yield, as you said, it's only one piece of the puzzle. Doesn't tell the whole story. We need to pair that with capital growth potential for the complete picture, don't we? What's the strategic trade-off between those two?
This is absolutely key, capital growth. It simply measures the increase in the property's value over time. That's your long-term equity potential. So here's the trade-off. In a mature, stable market, you might accept a pretty decent, say, 5% yield. Why? Because you might only project maybe 2% capital growth per year, steady but slow. But an investor with a longer time horizon, maybe someone younger, they might strategically accept a lower yield, say only 3%. They do that if their location analysis suggests there's potential for maybe 8% capital growth annually, because that means massive long-term equity buildup, even if the monthly cash flow isn't as high right now.
Okay. That's the strategic difference crystallized, prioritizing immediate cash flow, that's yield, versus building future equity gains, that's capital growth. And then we combine both of those into the overall ROI, return on investment, which measures the total profitability.
Precisely. ROI aims for that total picture, your rental income, plus the appreciation. You're typically targeting somewhere in the 6% to 12% plus range for a good overall return. And one final check you absolutely must do is the vacancy rate. Look at the market average. If it's, say, 10% vacancy in that city, but your specific target neighborhood is consistently below 5%, that signals strong, reliable tenant demand. That indicator is just as crucial as the yield number itself, sometimes more so.
Okay, fantastic. So we've covered the property types, the sourcing strategies, and the core evaluation metrics. Let's close the loop now by looking at the common mistakes, the pitfalls that can sink even otherwise promising investment strategies. What did the sources highlight?
Yeah, the research points to four really critical errors investors make. The first one is something we just talked about solving, relying on a single source for deals. If you limit yourself to just one website or just one agent you know, you are absolutely guaranteed to miss out on the off-market deals and other opportunities. You have to maintain that mixed active search strategy. Online, agents, auctions, networking, use them all.
Makes sense. Diversify your sourcing. Okay, mistake number two sounds particularly dangerous, especially if you're chasing those international or auction deals, skipping due diligence.
Never, ever skip it or skimp on it. You absolutely must check legal ownership titles, local zoning rules, any outstanding debts tied to the property. And for international investing, this is paramount because the rules and regulations vary so wildly from country to country. We found examples, you know, where investors bought land in an emerging market, great price, only to discover later, too late, that local zoning completely prevented them from building the type of structure they intended, turned a potentially profitable deal into just a landholding liability. Very costly.
Ouch. Okay, mistake number three, failing to calculate the true cost of ownership, not just the sticker price.
Exactly. Ignoring hidden costs, the purchase price, that's just the entry fee. It's just the beginning. So many investors fail to properly factor in reserves for maintenance, property taxes, which can change, transfer fees, insurance, maybe professional management fees if you use them. If you project, say, a 6% profit margin, but those hidden operational costs actually eat up 3%, well, your effective return is suddenly halved. You have to budget for these things realistically from day one, or you can watch that projected profit just evaporate to a loss.
Right. Budget for everything. And finally, the maybe universal pitfall, easy to fall into, overly optimistic financial projections. Wishful thinking.
Yeah. Don't let enthusiasm cloud your judgment or your math. It's easy to do. You have to rigorously test those high rental yield projections against actual historical occupancy rates for the area and realistic local rental prices, not just what you hope to get. If a property looks too good to be true compared to the local averages, it probably is. Use that vacancy rate metric we talked about. It helps ground your yield projections in actual demand reality.
Okay, really crucial warnings there. So bringing it all together, what does this kind of aggressive research and careful evaluation strategy mean for building long-term portfolio security? The sources we reviewed repeatedly emphasized the importance of diversification and resilience, didn't they?
They did, very strongly. Look, if you put all your capital into just one single property type play, let's say it's all residential apartments, or you concentrate all of it geographically in one single evolving market, you're amplifying your risk significantly. To build a truly resilient long-term wealth strategy, the advice is clear. You need to combine different types of real estate. Maybe pair some stable residential with some specialized commercial assets. Or strategically allocate a portion of your overall wealth to other stable, perhaps digitized asset platforms.
You mean things like secure, maybe tokenized real estate funds, or other kinds of asset-backed vehicles that can provide a buffer against specific market shocks in one area?
Exactly that kind of thing. That balance reduces your portfolio's reliance solely on, say, monthly rental income, which can dip during market downturns. It ensures your assets are working for you across multiple stable fronts, making the whole structure more robust.
Okay, so to recap, we covered the three essential property types, residential, commercial, and vacation rentals, with their different risk-return profiles. We detailed the four key sourcing channels, online platforms, agents and brokers, auctions, and crucial networking. And we really broke down those critical strategic metrics. understanding rental yield, balancing it with capital growth potential, calculating true ROI, and using vacancy rates to judge real demand.
That's right. Property, it remains a profoundly powerful wealth-building tool, no question. But its true strength, its resilience, is really unlocked when you pair that aggressive research and sophisticated sourcing with a focus on market resilience and diversification. The right approach, it involves strategy, definitely good timing, and always, always questioning the assumptions presented to you. Dig deeper.
So now that you know the evaluation metrics, the sourcing strategies, and those common mistakes to avoid, here's the important question to think about. How would you proactively use that predictive location analysis we talked about, specifically looking for those planned infrastructure projects or new business hubs coming to an area that graft? How would you use that insight to confidently invest in an evolving market, maybe an emerging one, and deliberately aim to beat that typical 5% capital growth target? How do you turn a stable asset into a rapid equity builder through foresight, something to chew on as you start your own deep dive?